Hey, good morning, everyone. My name is Stephanie. I'm the lead pastor here, and I just want to extend a special welcome to anyone who's visiting. I see some folks that I haven't met yet. Thanks for coming. We know it takes courage to come into a new community, and we're really grateful that you're here. We've been in the Sermon on the Mount together for a while, so that's what we're going to dig into today. But one of my favorite things to do is a quick poll, okay? So who has a pet? All right, where's my dog people? Okay, cat people. Okay, anybody that has a pet bird? Okay, you have, Leslie, you have a pet bird? Oh my goodness. I have like a fear of birds. I think they're very beautiful. Does it stay in a cage? Most of the time. Can it be in a cage when I come to your house? Okay. I mean, it can fly free when I'm not around. That's fine. That's cool. Okay, here's the thing, people who don't have pets. Let me tell you, 100% chance that a pet will make your life better, okay? Like, I mean, sometimes they make it more complicated, but overall, a pet's going to make your life better. I'm going to give you some reasons, okay? One of the reasons is that it has been proven that when you have a pet, it will lower your stress and your cortisol levels and give you endorphins and things like that, okay? So that's a proof. Second, I like to think that all pets are support animals. Some of them are just freelance. So you might have a freelance one, you know? And then I have one top reason that pets are the best. Are you ready for it? Animals are way easier to live with than humans. Anyone else? Yeah? Okay. I got some snaps in the back. All right. Listen, here's the thing. Pets are amazing because most of them are super good listeners. Most of them, like, you know, they're not going to go out with friends and forget to invite you. You know, stuff like that. Humans do. And besides cats, none of them really judge you. So that's cool. You know, like, pets are awesome. And so, you know, This is a great thing about pets. I like to sum up my life. We have a dog story. Here's a picture of her and my prayer. Lord, help me to be the person my dog thinks I am. You know, because she really is a boost to the self-esteem, you know? Like, when I wake up, I look terrible. And she's like, you're the best. You know, like, that's it. I love it. I love it about her. Humans, on the other hand, are complicated. All right, you know, living with humans, just being around other humans. There is no such thing as a close relationship or a close friendship between two humans that is uncomplicated, okay? If you're close, there's going to be tension. There's going to be conflict. It's going to be difficult. I mean, like this week, I got into a heated disagreement with my husband about bananas. And as most married people know, it's not about the bananas actually, though, right? Like, it's not actually about the bananas. But the thing is humans, we are kind of ridiculous. Okay? And so I'm just saying the dogs and the pets, and they're a little less complicated, yeah? Okay. This is one of the things I love about Jesus, as we see here in the Sermon on the Mount. He seems to get this about us. Like, he seems to get that we're kind of complex, kind of complicated, and all of our relationships are such. And I do think that Jesus has a lot of grace for us. Enough grace to actually give us some feedback and some thoughts. And even though he has grace for us, it's really clear that Jesus doesn't shy away from challenging us to be the people who live into God's best for our relationships with one another. Because he loves us, and he wants us to treat each other with that love. And he's got some thoughts and some advice for us. And so as we've seen this already in our journey in the Sermon on the Mount, again, we've been in this sermon since September of last year, so we're making it, guys, okay? We're almost there. And this is the most famous sermon of Jesus. It's found in Matthew chapter 5 through 7, the Sermon on the Mount, it's often called. And there is this powerful illustration at the end of the sermon. And what Jesus is saying in this illustration is, hey, everything that I've said up until now, here's what's at stake about whether you put this into practice or you don't. And he uses this illustration of a road that is parting in the middle, and there's this sense of a fork in the road, okay? And the road leads to life or leads to destruction. And Jesus is saying there's a road leading to life and destruction, and it's a choice that you need to make. The road to life isn't just about the afterlife. It's about our life now, the life we're in now, the experience that we have. And if we choose the road to life, it's going to be a life of meaning, of purpose. It's going to be a life that's connected to God and to other people. And that's in stark contrast to the road to destruction, which is a life that's void of these things. And Jesus talks about this road of destruction. And it's a road that ends up kind of curving inwards, leaving little room for God or anybody else in our life. And it leads to this life void of meaning and connection and purpose. Now, here's the thing. Both roads, both of them are difficult. And they're difficult for different reasons. But choosing the road to life changes how every difficulty and every challenge is experienced. And so today, we're turning the page to the final chapter, chapter 7. We made it to chapter 7, everybody, where Jesus gets into it in a pretty bold way about relationships that we have with each other. So if you have a Bible, we'll be in chapter 7. He does not hold back here in this passage, guys, so just be ready for that. But these verses, here's the thing. I think they're some of the most practical advice that Jesus gives. Honestly, when we look at it together, I think you'll see it's very practical. However, it's very challenging to live it out. Practical words that are difficult to live out. Jesus comes right out of the gate with Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, with a pretty, I would say, direct warning about how we relate to one another. This is what he says. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. See what I mean? So Jesus is coming out strong here. The tension is thick. You can't miss it, right? We all know at our core that there's this reality that we have this tendency to judge other people. Whether we say it out loud or not, we have this tendency in our hearts. And the same measure, if that same measure we're judging somebody else with was applied to us, most of us in an honest moment are like, oh, no. I don't want that to come back at me because I don't always get things right and we all have a long way to go. We don't have it all together. But I do read this and I think, okay, Jesus, I hear what you're saying. I don't want to be a judgmental person, but there is also this reality that we do need to make judgment calls at times, right? Does that question come up to any of you when you read this? Don't other places in Scripture encourage us to make judgment calls about things, to make moral judgments? I think we need to unpack what Jesus is saying here a little bit. Most scholars believe that we need to make a clear distinction when we think of judgment between moral discernment and personal condemnation. These are two different things. And when we get them confused, we can get ourselves in a really weird spot. Moral discernment, or the ability to discern the difference between what is good and bad, what is right and wrong, what is best and not best, that's moral discernment. Personal condemnation is a posture of judgment and condemnation towards another human or group of humans. It's that second personal condemnation that Jesus is referring to here when he says judgment. Like being the judge of someone's soul. Humans are not God, and therefore aren't the judge of another person's worth. Humans are not the judge of the outcome of the life choices of other humans. Only God can be the judge. So it might be better to read that passage as, do not condemn or you too will be condemned. Kind of gives us a little bit of a bigger picture. So let's pause. Why is it so easy for us to seem to stand in for God and begin to judge other people? What is going on with us? I read this kind of scary study that says that the more familiar someone gets with the Bible, like as you read it, study it over time, which is good, the more familiar you are, the more you begin to identify with God in the story instead of identifying with the other imperfect humans trying to respond to God. Let's just think about that one for a minute. The more that we understand the Bible, which is good, there's this tendency that we start to slip into thinking like, well, I'm going to take God's perspective on this. I'm kind of like God in the story. What? Hold on. What's happening here? I think that's a tendency for some of us. I've seen it in my own life. We also see that in psychology, when we are struggling with deep shame, when we are struggling with our own sense of inadequacy, we often shift that shame, shift it, and project it onto other people so that we can feel better about ourselves. The hard thing about that is it works temporarily. It makes us feel better about ourselves. If I can judge that this person's worse than me or has made worse off decisions, we almost by like reaction psychologically, it's a defense mechanism where we shift that shame onto other people or groups of people. So we know judging other people, that's not good for those people, is it? But guess what? It's not good for the judgy humans trying to play God either. It's bad for the judgy ones too. So I think Jesus is actually giving some pretty practical advice here. No one should be the judge of someone else's soul besides God, right? Judging other people. I think Jesus is kind of saying, like, you humans, you want to use these other human measurements for something pretty big, don't you? You don't want humans to be making those calls. Okay, so if that's Jesus' first piece of advice, which is already pretty big, what comes up in my mind is, okay, but what about the moral discernment thing, Jesus? Right? Like, what about the ability to discern the difference between right and wrong and good and bad? What role is that supposed to play, Jesus? And it's almost like he knew we were going to ask that question. It's almost like he knew, and so then we see in part two of his advice, he's kind of responding to what I think would be, well, what about that? And Jesus says in verse 3, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will be able to see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Now, this is one of the better-known jokes of Jesus. Most scholars believe it's a joke, and not the content of it, but he's using this hyperbolic, almost like slapstick comedy, to be able to make a point. Maybe he realized he came out a little strong with that first point, so he's trying to tone it down a little bit. I don't know. But most scholars are thinking, hey, this isn't to be, like, gruesome, but he's trying to be goofy, kind of, here. And maybe you can even imagine, maybe Jesus even acting this out a little bit and saying, can you imagine, like, a plank coming out of someone's eye? Like, you know, imagine, oh, a 2x4 coming out of their eye. Oh, my goodness, it's like slapstick comedy. My husband's way more into slapstick than I am, but I can try to imagine it. And so you imagine a person with a 2x4 coming out of their eye trying to get close to pull a speck out of your, I mean, it's totally silly, right? It's absolutely ridiculous. But Jesus is doing something interesting here. It's a pretty interesting communication technique. He's talking about how there is a right way and there is a wrong way to share moral discernment with somebody that you love. This is why he's using this familial term, brother. It's not to be seen as only those you're related to, but he's choosing that term to say the people you are close to relationally, if you care about them. Notice he doesn't say stranger on the street, person you don't know, acquaintance who didn't really ask for your opinion. Like, that's not what he said, okay? Didn't even use the term neighbor, right? He's talking about someone close to you. If someone you love has a speck in their eye, sure, it's no plank, but we all of us have had something in our eye, and it's like, you know, dust, hair, spices, because you didn't wash your hands after you were cooking. It's terrible, right? And so the at best, when you have something in your eye, it's super annoying. At worst, it's like ruins your day or causes a serious injury to a person. If you love someone, you don't want them to have something in their eye. But Jesus makes a pretty clear distinction for us here. You need to do your work if you are going to be someone who can help somebody else. You're going to have to do your own work if you're going to be helpful. Now, this is a funny image. It's goofy when we think about it, but we all have experiences where we've experienced what it represents, don't we? We go to call somebody out, and yet we kind of know we're coming at it with a critical spirit and arrogance and some hypocrisy maybe, and we end up not only failing to help them with whatever's in their eye, but we smack them over the head with the 2x4 that's coming out of ours, and then they have an emotional wound on top of whatever they've got in their eye. It kind of lines up, doesn't it? Like, we see this in our actual lives. And so I think Jesus is using this image to make a really strong point as well, because he's also referring to this image of an eye. Just a few verses ago in chapter 6, in their culture, he had used that same image. In the first century culture, a good eye or a bad eye. A good eye means generous, and a bad eye means stingy. And so here Jesus is using that image to say, hey, get the plank out of your eye so you can have a good eye and offer support to your friend, which would be a generous spirit rather than a judgmental spirit, a stingy spirit, a judgmental spirit, a critical spirit. And so if you can get that plank out of your eye, then you'll have a generous ability to come alongside somebody that you love. So I think about this and I think, Jesus is inviting us to be suspicious about what we think of when we're discerning good and bad. He's like, be a little suspicious about thinking you're right away. You need to really think about this. We need to ask God for wisdom. And then we need to do the hard work of self-assessment. Yikes. Because these things are complicated, aren't they? Jesus wants us to be a little suspicious about some of the things that we have a gut reaction of. This is right, this is wrong. Wait, hold on. Let's pray about this. Let's ask for wisdom, and then let's do the hard work of self-assessment. This is my opinion, but somebody who's just every day posting salty mic drops on social media, calling people out who they don't even know personally, people using shame to try to motivate people's behavior, I mean, is this the fruit of someone committed to self-reflection? Jesus is saying to those people, like, well, I mean, I don't know that he's saying not to do it. It seems like those things are maybe more about how that person feels than about anything anyone else is going to hear from them. and how it makes them feel when they do those things. And so Jesus says, you hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Now, it seems a little harsh for Jesus to say, you hypocrite, because in our context, that would be a pretty big put down. But we need to know that there's a little bit different meaning when Jesus uses the word hypocrite here than in modern English. And I think it's kind of an important meaning. He uses it a little bit earlier in the Sermon on the Mount as well. Most of us would agree in modern English, hypocrites are those who say one thing and do another. Those who pretend to be one thing, but they're not really that. But when Jesus uses the word, it's in this context, he's saying a hypocrite, somebody who does the right thing, but for the wrong motive and for the wrong reason, which is a little different, isn't it? He's like, don't just do the right thing when you know it's not coming from the right place. And so what we see Jesus saying here is it's the right thing to want to help your friend, your actual close friend, get the speck out of their eye. That's a good thing to want to do that. But you need to check your motive. And if there's any judgmental spirit plank in there, you got to get it out so that you can see clearly to remove that speck from your brother's eye. Then you can have a generous spirit. Then you can come and point out something that's not good for them or something that you're concerned about. Do you actually have concern in your heart, or do you just want to be right? This is what Jesus is confronting. So I think Jesus is using this hyperbolic slapstick routine to say, you need to do your own work so you can be a healthy, generous person if you want to help somebody else when they need it, all right? I mean, well, again, pretty practical, right? Not easy to do, but pretty practical. You've got to do your own work if you want to be a healthy, generous person that can help somebody else out when they need it, because we do need to help each other. There's kind of a lot at stake with this one. When we think about our interpersonal relationships, the people we're close to, not just the online stuff and all that, but think about the people you know in person that you're connected to, the people that you care about. I'm going to tell you a story about one of the times I found out how much is at stake here with this. When I was in college, I was an intern with my youth pastor at my home church, and one of the youth group women there, when she grew up, we were both adults, and we went to get coffee, and we were chatting about her life when she was in high school, and I remembered that when she was in high school, it was kind of obvious she was making some choices that weren't really helpful to her. They were harmful to her and to people around her, not to mention that she had a really unhealthy relationship with this guy who was pretty obviously controlling in her life. And I didn't have the courage to confront her with love. And so when we were getting coffee together and we were chatting about this, she was talking about that in her life and sharing some of the painful things that happened. And at one point she asked me if I could tell that things were just going terribly for her and that she was making these choices and if I noticed how toxic that guy was. And she asked me if I ever noticed it, and I was honest with her and I was like, yeah, I did. And I'll never forget the look in her face when she said, why didn't you ever say something? Oh, man. Of course, I mean, I had excuses, and they all came up, but they all sounded pretty silly after she told me what she had been through. I mean, I had excuses, right? Like, I guess I didn't want her to think I was judgmental, right? I guess I didn't want her to think I was too into purity culture, whatever we called it back in the 90s. I don't know. I don't know. And you know what? I had some eye plank problems. I did. And so I was not a person who did the work to get those eye planks out so I could actually be helpful to this gal. And since that moment when she told me that at that coffee shop, God has brought that image up to me time and time again, I think out of love, where I see that look in her eye when she said, why didn't you ever say something? And it stuck with me in so many scenarios. I can see how easy it is for us to fall into being judgmental. I can see how easy it is for me to fall into being judgmental. But I can also see how easy it is to fall into the fear of being perceived as judgmental and then not using that as an excuse to not do the emotional work that I need to do to be a good friend and to have the courage I need to say something to somebody that I love. And people will get hurt that maybe didn't have to. I don't know what would have happened in that scenario, right? When you think about the eye plank, as goofy as it is, think about the eye plank as anything that hinders us from a connection to God or to other people. When we think about the road to life, that's a road that doesn't have those planks, the planks of sin and brokenness. But sometimes it's a lack of courage or insecurities. Sometimes it's pride or arrogance. But I think it would be an important question for all of us. What tendencies of planks do we have? What tends to be the planks that we have in our eyes? If we can know that, then we can begin to confront that and bring those things to Jesus and be like, oh man, This is the plank that I find in my eye, and I can't be a good friend. I can't be a good spouse. I can't be a good daughter or husband, all those things, right? What are the eye planks that are most likely in your life? Let's reflect on that. So I think Jesus' advice part two is you need to do your own work so you can be a healthy, generous person who can help someone else out when they need it. And then Jesus gives one final warning. It's kind of a weird one. He moves from slapstick comedy to like a kind of goofy riddle, okay? So are you ready for it? Here it is in verse 6. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. Try to imagine it. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. Whoop. Okay, so this is a kind of goofy riddle. I imagine this riddle made a little bit more sense in the first century context that Jesus was speaking into. It's actually interesting. Scholars have done a lot of study on it, and they don't totally agree, like, what exactly was he talking about? Because it, you know, not our culture today. But we see Jesus here, regardless of exactly what he was talking about in the first century, I think he's making some pretty clear advice principles for us today. I think they're actually pretty timely for us in the divisive times that we're in right now. So let's try to get into it here a little bit. So we have these two things, right? Two things that are considered sacred and two things in the first century that would be considered unclean or unsafe, okay? So we've got the pearls and what is sacred, and we've got the pigs and the dogs. And these are parables about things that are incompatible with each other, is what Jesus is pointing out. Now, it's a stretch for some of us who treat our dogs like children to understand exactly what Jesus is saying here when he uses dogs, but we need to realize that in that culture, dogs did not live in the home, and they did not have a special bed next to our bed, and all of those things. And so we need to be picturing like wild, feral dogs, okay? That not the ones we buy the personalized sweaters for, okay? That's different. Now, the pigs mentioned here, most scholars don't believe we're talking about like Peppa Pig, so cute. Like we're probably not talking about like a cute little piglet or even like the big one laying down at the state fair. But these are probably like wild boars, which would have been common in that first century, and you do not want to get in their path. They will actually cause damage, unlike Peppa, right? So we got to imagine this. Now, these two things were things that we know the Jewish community at the time considered like ritually unclean, and so that's probably part of what Jesus is saying here. And Jesus is contrasting the sacred and the pearls as what's set apart from God, and the sacred pearls, most scholars think, are referring to wisdom from God. And because it's in the Sermon on the Mount, which is Jesus giving God's wisdom, it's even looking back and referring to the Sermon on the Mount. The things that you've taken from what Jesus has shared so far, these pearls of wisdom that you have in your life, sharing that wisdom with your brother and sister that you love is often what true friendship is all about. It's critical. It's important. Even if at times they get defensive, even if at times you get defensive, that's part of what true friendship is all about, sharing wisdom with each other. Now, I think we can all collectively be uncomfortable with what seems like Jesus referring to humans as dogs and pigs, okay, right? Collectively, we're going, what in the world? But scholars are not totally sure about this, but they think he's being kind of tongue-in-cheek. Like, other people are, humans are referring to each other in that way. As you know, if somebody in the first century wanted to be rude, they would refer to a human as an animal. Guess what? Same today, right? Like, same thing. And so people do that. And so Jesus is kind of like taking their language. Well, you use this language to talk about people. And that's what they think he's doing here. If someone wanted to be rude, that's what he's saying. So imagine this. Jesus is saying, why do you think sharing wisdom with people who have no ability to see its value would go well? Like animals, another species, right? Jesus is saying to them, you even refer to these other people that you don't, you know, get along with as animals. That's a you thing. And so that's even more confusing about why you would try to give God's pearls of wisdom and words of instruction to these people. If they're animals, Jesus is saying, if they're animals, as you say, then first of all, they don't know how to evaluate what's valuable and invaluable, right? But you should. Jesus is like, you should know what's valuable and invaluable. Dogs and pigs represent those who will not understand the value of wisdom when it's offered to them. Now, no one who knows me will be shocked that I think my dog, Story, is one of the smartest dogs. Her name's Story. She's very smart. But I thought we would have her show what we're talking about here, that dogs and pigs have no ability to evaluate the value of something, all right? So here is an example. I made a quick video of her proving Jesus' point.
All right, Story, come choose which one you think is the most valuable.
Those are real pearls.
Okay.
Okay, so there we go. She, that's it. So the, you know, fabric lobster, cool orange ball, actual pearls I borrowed from my mom. She picks the cheap ball, all right? Because she's a dog, right? And she doesn't have the ability. And so I think Jesus is kind of saying, like, look. There's no point in offering valuable correction when it's going to be despised and rejected by those who are unable to see its value. And if they're a hostile audience, there's a chance they're going to turn on you, and that result's going to be really painful. A proverb that Jesus' audience and Jesus himself would have been very familiar with is Proverbs 23:9. Do not speak to fools, for they will scorn your prudent words. I think this riddle is one, like many of Jesus' riddles, that can have lots of different meaning in our lives and in different times and different places. And so I don't know what this riddle brings up in your life. But I'll tell you, for me, this riddle seems to speak so loudly into the culture war that we are living in this world with right now. Why in the world would we keep screaming at people with all caps online who are not even interested in our opinion? Why would we be sitting down and again speaking at someone who's like, I've already told you I don't care what you think? But we do. I just think it's speaking right into this. I spoke with somebody recently. She doesn't go to our church, but she was talking about this family member in her life, and she's like, oh man, I just so badly want this guy to see the truth and to turn away from what she called the lies that he was believing. And I listened to her and I said, well, do you think that he is open to your opinion? And she said, no! And I said, okay, well, are you open to changing your mind based on his opinion when you guys talk? She said, no way! Man, that guy is believing crazy things. They have no face reality at all. It's just totally crazy. This is the pearls and pigs, okay? It doesn't matter which person's right here in this situation. When you are casting what you think is wisdom that you hold dear in front of those who are not even open to recognizing it, Jesus says, don't do that. Why are you doing that? Is that about them or is it about you? They won't recognize it. And it could get even uglier. They may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces like the wild boar. That was a boar. Yeah, okay. Someone's like, whoa, what are we doing? So this is Jesus' point here. And again, he's kind of being funny a little bit. So I really don't think that he's giving permission for us to call someone an animal, okay? And he's certainly not giving us permission to call someone a fool. Look back a chapter, he has some pretty harsh words for people who talk about other people that way. I think what he's doing is exposing this illogical behavior that so many people engage in now and today, I think, of offering wisdom to those who have no interest in it, even if your motives are good. Some of you have read the research that's pretty clear today about how if you come to somebody and you're responding to their position with facts and sometimes even reason or at times like just yelling, what we know is that the opposing party in almost all circumstances will get further entrenched in their positions or behaviors. That has been proven again and again and again. There are a few things that if there's going to be a shift or a change, and that's a really big if, with somebody's opinion, there's only like three successful efforts. Present a greater, attractive, more compelling, or beautiful, or lovely option. Well, what about this beautiful thing? Or engaging with curiosity and asking questions. Or telling a story where the listener might feel empathy with the perspective that you're sharing. These are the things that we see. Do these things not sound like Jesus? He's always doing that. He's always like, let me tell you about a better, more compelling option here. It's called the kingdom of God. Let me ask some questions. I've got questions for you. Let me just tell you a story. Parables. Let me give you an example of this. There was a man and he had two sons, right? Jesus is always doing this. In this third warning, then, Jesus has these two warnings, and then he's got this third one. And I think that he's saying there is no point in offering valuable wisdom or correction when it will be despised and rejected. Or worse, it will lead to more pain and division. Pretty practical, right? So here's the practical advice we have from Jesus when it comes to how we relate to each other. No one should be the judge of someone else's soul besides God. Okay, check. Do your own work so you can be a healthy, generous person who can help someone else out when they need it. All right, pretty clear. And there's no point in offering valuable wisdom or correction when it's going to be despised or rejected, or worse, will lead to more pain and division. I read this and I think that would make my relationships better for sure. Okay, that would go better than some of the choices I've made. But I also look at that and I think that is so hard. I can't do that. Right? Anyone else? Like, that is really hard. Jesus, thanks for the practical advice, but this is pretty difficult to do. So here's what's critical for us. And spoiler alert, next Sunday, we're going to see how Jesus has a really important follow-up to these warnings and to this advice. And it's to ask God for wisdom to navigate the complexity that we're all facing. Because that's the only way it's going to work. We're going to have to ask God for wisdom. I can't really see how I could even begin to live into this advice without the empowerment of the Holy Spirit. I can't even see how I'd truly do this without God's wisdom in my life. Because why? Every situation is different. When I was going through Jesus' advice, were you thinking of different scenarios and you're like, well, that person, like, are they a pig? No, oh, not a pig. Like, you're like trying to think about this. Like, and then you're like, well, is that person a close enough friend that I could do the spec thing or not? And I don't know. Like, the thing is it's complicated. These are not that black and white. Jesus is giving good advice, but he makes it pretty clear throughout Scripture, like, we better lean into God's wisdom. We've got to do it if we have any chance at all. So let's think about this. I mean, if we're going to lean into the wisdom of God, that's the only chance we're going to cut through all the chaos and all the noise and all this stuff, right? Let's use the experience I had with that gal in my youth group as a case study, okay? So case study about the gal in my youth group. What could I have done differently if I was taking Jesus' advice here, all right? Now, I think that, you know, we remember she was making some unhealthy choices, really toxic relationship with a guy. I never said anything about it, even though I could totally see it. She ended up experiencing some really serious harm due to that relationship especially, okay? So I think we can all have some grace for 21-year-old Steph, yeah? Okay, can we also have grace for 41-year-old Steph? Good, okay, good, because I'm still getting humbled by this stuff, okay? So what could I have done differently if I was following Jesus' advice here? I think, first of all, I could have done a better job of determining the difference between moral discernment and personal condemnation. I think that I was kind of hiding behind this idea of, well, I don't want to be judgmental, right? I didn't want to condemn her. But I could make a moral judgment. I could see it with my eyes. Like, it was happening right in front of me. The path she was on, I knew was not good. It was a path to destruction. And she confirmed that years later. So I could have done a better job recognizing that instead of hiding behind, I don't want to be judgmental, right? Secondly, I could have done the work to figure out what my planks were, right? The things that were coming out of my eye, hard for me to actually be someone who could help somebody else. What were some of the big ones for me as a 21-year-old? Well, I was struggling with some sin and some brokenness that I hadn't brought into the light yet. And so that felt like a huge plank coming out of that eye. I wasn't able to be a healthy person at that point who could really help her with the speck in her eye, so to speak. And that ended up causing a lot of great damage to her eye and her life, right? Even if I was able to approach her, right, and I was healthy and a clear-eyed person, so to speak, generous in my response, that might not have been something she received, right? Like, she might not have listened to me. But I knew she wasn't someone who would despise or reject in a terrible way, like Jesus' warning here. I knew that. I knew we were becoming friends. I knew she respected me. But here's the thing. 21-year-old Steph, she also wanted the teenagers to think she was cool. Now, Mill City teenagers, I have long given up on that. Like, whoa, not even close. I'm just trying not to be too cringy at this point. That's all that I'm doing. But at the time, I was like, well, respect is cool, but I really want to be cool, right? Like, that was what I was going with at the time. And there's no way to know how she would have responded if I would have confronted her. We'll never know. Her listening to me was not in my control, but my willingness to love her enough was in my control. My willingness to carefront her, I know that's cheesy, but like, think about it, carefront, confront, like, it helps me to think, like, if I can't care for somebody with this, I can't approach them. If it's going to be if it's going to come from a negative place in me, I don't get to control how they receive it, but I better be starting with care in my heart or I shouldn't be saying anything at all. This is what Jesus is talking about. Now, there was one more critical thing that I think I missed doing in this situation, a huge fail in this situation. I have no memory of asking God for wisdom in this situation. I don't have any memory of asking like an older adult for some wisdom in this situation. And here's the thing. I knew that I could ask God for wisdom and God would give it to me. I was someone who, one of my life verses then and now was James 1:5, where it just says so clearly, if anyone lacks wisdom, they can ask God who gives generously without finding fault and it will be given to you. I lacked wisdom and I didn't even ask, even though I knew that I could. And I have a suspicion that it was because I don't know that I really wanted to hear what God had to say. And I wonder how more times in life, how much more often we would hear God's voice if God's voice is what we actually wanted to hear in certain situations. Jesus shared these words with the crowd out of love for them. We must see that it was out of love. Jesus, as he was sharing these words out of love, these people had no idea what lengths he would go to show his love to them. They had no idea how painfully he would model laying down your life for other people that are your enemy at times, right? Jesus invites us and challenges us to walk this road to life, but it is only available to us because he conquered death on the cross and came back to life. That's why the road to life is available to us. His victory through death, through his death and resurrection, his victory over death means that the planks of brokenness and sin and pride and insecurity and arrogance don't have to have the final say in our lives or in this world. That's the power of what he accomplished on the cross. Jesus gave up everything to be able to make a way for us to have a direct relationship with God where we could receive the wisdom that we need to be able to live through the complexities of our lives. So today, I think if that's true, if Jesus did all that, then the best thing we can do is just stop and ask him for the wisdom that he so freely offers to us. And so I just want to create some space to do that. The worship team's going to come up. Where do you need wisdom from God in your relationships? This is my final just question to you. Because we can memorize that list of good advice from Jesus, but you can memorize it all you want. That doesn't mean it's going to be something we can do unless we receive wisdom and empowerment from the Holy Spirit. So where do you need wisdom from God in your relationships? Perhaps you know you've been kind of slipping into the role of judge, taking the place that only God should have. Maybe you realize, like, there's some work that needs to be done. I've got some plank removal to do, right? I maybe need some forgiveness from God so I can get this plank out of here. And perhaps you see relationships where you felt like, oh, I've got to sound the alarm. I've got to do it. I've got to declare this valuable wisdom and correction. But you see Jesus saying, don't waste those pearls. Every single one of us needs to pause, probably every single day, right? And ask for wisdom when it comes to the complexity of relating to each other in our families, in our workplaces, in our neighborhoods, in our friendships, amongst our neighbors, and at times amongst those who feel like enemies. Where do you need wisdom from God in your relationships?